Today, the bottom line is God designed us to talk. Some of us are more quiet than others. Some of us talk more than others. But at the end of the day, we talk. God just designed us. Very few of us are just never really talk. And when we talk about things and we talk about people often. So today in our culture, who are probably the two most talked about people these days? Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. There you go. There they are. Right? They're the most talked about people these days, right? And you know, we're not here to endorse or encourage anything. I'm just saying that they are, if you're at work, if you're at, you know, wherever you work, live, and play, they're often the source of conversation these days. Even I had a colleague and his parents went over to Europe on vacation. Even the taxi drivers were asking them about them. So, I mean, even across the world, people are being talked about, right? They're focal points, they're points of attention. Now, what's interesting, if I asked you, who is the most talked about person in all of history? Who is the most talked about person in all of history? It's Jesus. It's Jesus. And what's neat is, at this time of year, what happens is many of the leading newspapers, magazines like Time, Newsweek, and Life typically put his face on the cover and have feature articles about. I was walking through the airport this week traveling for work, and there's already covers out there on Jesus coming up to Easter here. The History Channel and other similar channels and televisions have special about him. Year over year, he is a person whose focus endures. He is always the story to tell. However, the stories that are told about Jesus vary according to your relationship with him. So what you say about Jesus really shows what's in your heart. So we're going to continue this morning in our series entitled Always, where we've been looking at this Jesus, as found in Mark chapter 3, 4, and 5, and looking at attributes of him that are always true. We looked last week and this week at this story of this person who was healed of these evil spirits. And even this week, we're going to turn our attention to the response that we saw from his community. We're going to learn more about Jesus and more about ourselves. So last week we walked through three things that just wanted us to be careful in our ways, to be accurate in our measurements, and to be crazy in our faith. And as this week, as we do that, in our second part of our story, we see this healed man's response to faith as compared to the people's limited response of amazement and fear. And what I want to do is today is just encourage us to gain eternal life, to get an eternal perspective, and also to give to others. So we're going to turn our attention to the passage. I'm going to start reading. It should be up on the screen. You can follow along. I do ask one small thing here this morning. It is daylight savings time. So I have a sense that people may be coming in, maybe in the middle of my message. I just ask you to give them graciousness. Phyllis and I have been in that position the first time we came to Hope. Okay, we actually came at the break. We didn't know that. And we thought, wow, there's this message and one song. It's a very interesting format of a service here. So, but we came back. We came back the next week because we were invited back and people engaged us and loved on us. So I just ask that we're going to show grace and mercy to people who come in the middle of message. So just please keep your attention as much as you can on the word and what God's trying to say to you today. Okay? So let's be gracious. So let me turn our attention to the passage. I'm going to be reading. Again, it's Mark chapter 5, verses 14 through 20. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this being the incident we talked about last week of the man being healed, in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much the Lord had done for him, and all the people were amazed. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk through these verses, kind of get some better understanding of them, and then see how it applies to our lives here today. So let's start in verse 14. We start verse 10, we see the initial response of the people to this miracle. So basically it says, those tending the pigs ran off and reported this. So they basically were news reporters, right? So they saw something happen, and in that day and age, they didn't have television and the internet, and the way that news traveled was by oral tradition. So people went and told stories about what they saw and what they encountered. So think about it. Think about the story they would tell. And they went over, you remember that wild man who's running around the tombs? Well, there was this guy, he got out of a boat, and they had this encounter, and afterwards the wild man was tame. And they're like, that wild man? Yeah, you know that? Yeah, I know that guy. And it seems that these impure spirits, not only that, but the guys go, okay now, and they went out of him into the pigs, and the pigs ran off a cliff, and they all died. This is amazing. Like, they've never seen anything like this, okay? This is crazy, as we said last week. So today, if we were going to do this, what would really happen today if this happened in our day and time, right? We'd have people with YouTube videos, right? We'd have pictures on Instagram, Facebook. I mean, it would be all over the place. You know, it would have so many hits, it isn't even funny. We'd be watching, did you see the pigs? You know, they said 2,000. I don't think there was 2,000. Maybe 2. I think it's an address. The man, I don't know. Where did he get the clothes now anyway, right? Like, what's going on here? The story doesn't all match up. So there's parts of the story that we piece together here and we wonder about. So I often thought about, what would be the headline for this story? How about pigs take after lemons and go to their crash, okay? Well, let's be fair. Lemmings only live in the Arctic, right? And they're not really familiar with them. So how about another one? Pigs don't fly, right? That wouldn't work out so well. That idiom really didn't come into play until about the 1600s or 1700s. So, you know, seriously, people would be telling the story of this man who had these spirits, large group of pigs. It's like 2,000 to 1 is kind of the thing I would say. Because there was 2,000 pigs that went to their death and one man who was saved. That's the best headline I could come up with. Now, the interesting thing is in verse 14, we say they went out to see what happened. That was the second part of the verse. Now, aren't we all wired that way? Like, if somebody tells you about something, wow, did you see in our neighborhood, a guy drove a car into a house. Okay, so we all had to go down and see it, right? Like, it was amazing, right? And that's the way it is. Like, on the turnpike, right? How many of us, like, watch, like, when we get into this traffic jam, like, oh, there must be an accident. And then when we get near the accident, we're all watching, right? We're rubberneckers, right? I mean, God wired us to be rubberneckers. I don't know why. Why do we watch race car crashes? How many of you watch the crashes? Why do we watch that, right? We're fascinated. Not only are we rubberneckers and fascinated with incidents, but destruction, right? Ruin just seems to be of more interest to us at times. And here's what happened. So we're all like, so you could see many of the people went back, and they're probably looking over the edge of the cliff, like, counting the pigs, 10, 20, like, a ton of pigs. And then they're like, whoa, that's that crazy guy over there, like, not too close. So you could just kind of imagine as the people came back and tried to attest this eyewitness accounts, what was going on? What was happening? Why were they so fascinated? And what's interesting is that we see what happens next. So it says in verse 15, they came to Jesus, they saw the man, and they saw him sitting there dressed in his right mind, and they were afraid. So they first came to Jesus. It doesn't say what they thought about Jesus, right? They're still unsure because, you know, this was not a Jewish area. They didn't have any messianic expectations. There was just this man came in the boat across the sea and then took care of this wild man who they were very familiar with. But the wild man, there's quite a bit of things said about him. The first thing is he was sitting. He was sitting. Now, what we saw before is, what was he doing? He was roaming around. He was restless, right? It also, this term sitting is actually the same term Mark uses earlier when he refers to Levi the tax collector, who was just sitting there taking the taxes, right? So a person who was just settled, right? So rather than somebody roaming night and day in the tombs, we have almost a period of calm in this man's life. So they see him calm. It also says he was clothed and right-minded. Now these terms are only found in this story here and in the Luke account. There's nothing else that we see in the New Testament about this idea of clothed or even right-minded. But obviously there's a contrast here to just the crazy, out-of-controlness that he had before. And as I was mentioning earlier, I often wonder, where did he get the clothes? Like, obviously, he didn't have any clothes. He had ripped them apart. So I think, I was thinking in my mind, like, you guys remember Andrew? So Andrew was one of the followers of the disciples. In John chapter 6, there's this huge crowd, and Jesus says, all right, we need to feed these people. What does Andrew do? He gets out his calculator. Okay, five fish, two loaves. So he's a guy who's thinking ahead. And so I was thinking, Andrew was probably thinking, all right, there's 12 of us. Okay, you got an extra pair of pants. You got an extra, like, what did they had on? And they probably just distributed the clothes and kind of, he had this makeshift, almost not like a Halloween costume look or whatever that he had on, but he was clothed, right? So there was a decency there. There was a sense where they wanted to care for not only his soul, but his body. And Jesus probably engaged them to be able to take care of this man. We move on to verse 16, and we see the story that the people were telling. It says, those who had seen it told the people what had happened. And they told them about the pigs, too, it says. So they obviously noticed this large group of pigs dead in the lake. And now they notice this man who was once uncontrollable, who's now sitting quietly, more than likely at the feet of Jesus. They were telling what happened. Jesus was the one about whom they were telling this story. They knew the story of the man quite well. They thought and felt that he was invincible before, and they were scared of him. And we see in the previous verse and also here, now they encountered somebody more powerful than him. So it's almost like those of us who follow boxing or wrestling or anything, like you have a champ, right? And he's seen as kind of the top guy. And then when the person beats them, we're like, wow. Like, you know, like Ronda Rousey, when she lost, right? We're like, oh, Holly Holm, she's the top dog or whatever. So whoever it is, when they win and beat the person who's the top person, the most invincible person, they're now seen with more esteem, and we're more afraid of them. And that's what's happening here. The people are now thinking, we were scared of that wild man before. This Jesus, what could he do? What could he do? So basically they had a choice to make. Did they think that this Jesus was really going to be for them and help them? Or were they afraid that he was going to disrupt and disturb their lives? We see what happens in verse 17. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As for fear, they feared Jesus. They wanted nothing to do with him. His awesome power was one that frightened them. They were afraid in the same way they tried to control the man. Remember, they tried to shackle him up? That's what they wanted to do with somebody who had power over them, and he couldn't be held down. Jesus even had more power than this man. So what's neat is that in the scriptures, what typically would happen when Jesus would do a miracle? People would come towards him. People would be drawn to him. They would want him to use their power to heal and to help them. This is one of the few situations that we have in the scriptures where Jesus did a miracle, did something dramatic to really heal someone, and people were driven away. Jesus, leave us. Go away. And what happens is that what it shows is what they valued. And, you know, we all value kind of things to be the same. We don't really, change is not really something we generally seek out. It usually seeks us out and disrupts us. And the other thing that we say is that not only their current status of life, but the things that they had were very important to them, even more so maybe than people. And you notice that's what was neat is that Mark tells the story and says, and he told the story about the pigs as well. So in orders of magnitude here, yes, 2,000 pigs, but one man, one has a soul for eternity. And I'm not here to talk about dogs and cats and all that stuff in heaven, but okay, but they're pigs, they're possessions. So it really challenges us to look at these people and say how they had more interest in their possessions than they did of the soul of one person. They thought more about their pigs than they did about this demon-possessed man who was now healed. In verse 18, we get to see the heart of what happened in this man. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. So what happened is we talked last week how they came down from Capernaum to this region. Now Jesus is going to get up back in the boat and go back, and Chick's going to share some of that next week of what happened. Some really neat things with Jairus and his daughter and a woman who has been ill for a long time. And just God's sense of timing. So it's interesting, like, to me, like, they got in the boat, they came across, and remember what happened in the boat, right? We had the squall, and they were scared to death, and now the disciples are scared again, and now the people are scared. So there's just fear wreaking everywhere. So think about what happens here before we look at the man, right? Jesus says, hey, guys, let's get back in the boat. So what are the disciples thinking? They're like, well, maybe we could just kind of walk around this time, right? Like, maybe we don't do the boat thing, okay? Well, that didn't go so well for us last time. Like, maybe we could just, you know, I've been having some panic attacks since the last time we went in there. I'm kind of struggling with some anxiety. Jesus, so let me kind of, maybe if I could take a little pill before we get in or for my motion sickness or my fear, right? But that's not. Jesus is going to get back in the boat. And what does the man want to do? He wants to go with him. What does that show us? Basically, if God transforms your life, if Jesus does something in your heart, what is your response if it's real? Your response is to follow after him, want to do what he says, want to be with him. There's just natural inclinations that happen when your heart is transformed. So he begs to go with him. Now what's neat is that both groups of people, both the people who were kind of telling the story in the town and the man, both pleaded with Jesus for something. The people said, please leave. And he says, please let me come with you. Please let me come with you. And the word begged here, it's a very interesting, it's the same term we see actually in the story of the prodigal son. And if you remember what happened in the story of the prodigal son, it wasn't the begging that happened of the son, but it was actually the begging of the father when he went outside to talk to the older brother. He implored him to come in and rejoice. And the same thing's happening here where there's this begging of this man, I really want to come with you. I really want to be part of this. So there was a change of his heart. There was a change of his mind. He didn't just receive from Jesus this transformation in his life, but he was able to change who was the Lord of his life, his lifestyle, and even his life's purpose. Everything was different because of his encounter with Jesus. And when our lives are transformed by Jesus, we desire to follow him too. We see Jesus' response in verse 19. He says, go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you. Now again, what's interesting here in verse 16 and verse 19, this word tell is the same thing. So the people are telling a story, and then Jesus is saying, I want you to tell. It's the same verb there where he wants them both to tell stories. Now notice he didn't tell them to write a book, go on a tour, make a movie of his story, right? I mean, those would be the things in our contemporary culture that if you have this wild testimony would often happen. What he did was just said, go back and tell people about me. Talk to the people where you live, where you work, and where you play, we say at our church. So this man who was once a menace to society, Jesus sent him out to be a messenger. And that's what Jesus sends us out to do, and we're going to see that in our application. Finally, in verse 20, we see what the healed man did. He actually obeyed. He did it right away. He began to tell people in his community what Jesus has done for him. And when we first come to Christ, that's what he wants us to do, is to share with those people closest to us what happened. I just want us to think about who are those people in our lives that we want to share what Jesus has done for us, the mercy he's had towards us. We all have a story to tell. So how do we apply this story, this wild, wild story of what happened? The first thing I want us to do is be reminded of how God designed us to seek after him. Our hearts are inclined for him. He wants us to gain eternal life. In our story, we saw a man who was of very little value to the people, but he was of great value to Jesus. Jesus values all of us the same. He wants all of us to come to him and be healed and have our hearts changed. And the fact that Jesus would take time with this outcast further demonstrates just the emphasis that he has on people. Mark 10, later in the book of Mark, and we'll put this verse up here now, shows you kind of what Jesus did. It says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and what? Give his life for us as a ransom in our place. And then you very much are familiar with when Mark tells the story in Mark chapter 8, when he challenges the rich young ruler and he says, what good is it for someone to what? Gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul. So the first application point we have here is that Jesus wants us to gain eternal life. And some of us are like the people who just want to stay comfortable. We want Jesus to leave us alone. It's good for you. I'm glad it's working for you. I'm glad he does some neat things in your life. But I just kind of need Jesus at an arm's length distance. And ideally, it'd be great if Jesus went back in the boat and kind of left me alone. I'll admire what he did in that man's life, and I'm glad he's not wreaking havoc on my family anymore. But I just don't want him touching my life. Jesus makes us feel uncomfortable. Some of us are worried of what he might do to us if we actually started to follow him. It's a little scary. So my prayer and our prayer as a church is that today would be the day that you let Jesus heal your heart, that you would understand the mercy that he had on you and tell people all the great things he's done in your life. The second thing we're reminded of in our story here today is how God designed us each with eternity in our hearts. He wants us to get an eternal perspective on things. Now, what's interesting is that, you know, probably a subtitle of this message that we could have is called Pissed Off About the Pigs, right? Because that's really kind of what happened. And for me, God really touched my heart to say, you know, what are the things that I'm happy about and what are the things that really perturb me? I don't like getting cut off in traffic. I don't like when somebody doesn't yield to my right away. I don't like when someone rolls through a stop sign. I don't like when somebody tailgates me. That's just in the car, okay? Let's bring it to the home now, okay? So I don't like it when somebody doesn't replace the soap in the shower. I don't like it when somebody leaves me little or no toilet paper. In short, I don't like it when people don't think of me. Okay, that's the bottom line, right? People are supposed to remember and think of me. That's why I'm here. God has designed us, right? That's our natural inclinations, right? So you can all think of those things that really bother you. We don't have enough time to go into those here today. You can share those maybe at the Easter breakfast with each other as you're talking. But I will tell you, God does not design our hearts that way. God designed our hearts to think of Him, to dwell on Him, to delight on Him. And our verse in 2 Corinthians 4:18 says, "So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but as one is unseen, since what is seen is temporary and what is unseen is eternal." He wants me to have an eternal perspective. He wants me to not count the pigs, but to rejoice in a man's heart who is saved. He wants me to focus on those things that really matter for eternity, to vet those things in my mind, to say, when something happens to me, is it really important for eternity? You know, we used to say in our house sometimes, you know, if no one's bloody or no one's going to hell, it's not that important. Those are kind of our two criteria. We don't always apply it, but it helps us get some eternal perspective. And unfortunately, I don't. I care about things like good grades, organized school bags, clean rooms. These things matter to me much more than it matters to God, okay? And we see here people, so before we kind of, we so quickly condemn the people, like, oh, they just wanted Jesus out of life and they're more care about the pigs. What do we care about in our lives that really have nothing to do with somebody's soul or somebody's eternal standing or even our own relationship with God? So I want to just encourage us in those areas to think through, God, please give me perspective to see people and see circumstances as you see them today. And the last thing, and it's the obvious application from this story, is we all have a story to tell. And I said in our title message, Jesus is the story. So basically, he's given us and designed us to do good works. He wants us to give to others. And we have our verse in Ephesians 2:10, "For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, for God prepared in advance for us to do." I mentioned earlier we have this story to tell. It's one of the ways that you can serve people. In our day and age, we are regularly socializing with one. I mentioned in the beginning, we just talk. So some of us don't even talk. Some of us just like to tweet, right? Some of us like to send a little email or a text. We're not as comfortable talking, but at the end of the day, we communicate with one another often, right? So we tell people where are good bargains to find, where a good place to eat, good advice on parenting, good tips on finance, right? Traffic reports. We are regularly socializing with one another. That's just the way we're wired, the way God made us. How many of you have passed on information that's useful to someone else in the past month? How many of you received useful information in the past month from someone else, right? So that's just what's going on, right? That's how we work. And I'm going to ask a hard question here. How many of us, and we're not taking hands, this is not judgmental, this is an encouragement. How many of us have been able to tell a story to somebody else about Jesus? About how he changed our lives, how he's had mercy on us, how he's blessed us, how he's encouraged us, how he's just been with us. So when we talk about "Be Thou My Vision," right, or "Jesus All for Jesus," we sing these songs, you know, how does it show up in our everyday life? If and what, you know, for example, for me, there's times where I begin to tell the story a little bit about Jesus, and then I get a little nervous, right, and then I kind of twist it, and like, oh, well, you know, Jesus, and like, I get the reaction, I'm like, well, you know, I've just been really blessed, you know, just kind of water it down a little bit. Or, you know, I start telling the story. I see somebody asked me even this week at work, are you religious? You know, and so that's my chance. The door's wide open to tell the story about Jesus and who he is and what he's done for me. So I want to encourage us in a little practical way. Some of us are a little more natural with talking when people ask us a question. Some of us need time to think about something in response. So usually the crowd here is half. So I'm not going to ask of you which of you would like to, like, think about something before you say it and which of you need to think more before you say something, okay? We have both kinds here, okay? But for both of those types of people that we are, I want to encourage you this week to just take time and write out your Jesus story. Just take a few minutes and write down, and maybe in a half a sheet of paper, what did Jesus do in your life? Who is he to you and what did he do? And just kind of make a couple of bullets. So that way, this next couple of weeks, particularly coming up to Easter, there's a good chance you're going to have an opportunity to share those bullets with somebody. God's not going to waste that time in your story, just like he didn't waste the story of this man. And what's neat about this man is, do we know his name? No. Because it's not about him. It's about Jesus. And so even this week, as you tell your story, make sure that it's about Jesus, not about you and all these things about yourself. That's not the way it's designed. I want to finish this up with just a fun story that I enjoy. So I don't watch a lot of television. I don't follow a lot of contemporary things. I am sadly, we won't get into the reasons for that. But I want to tell you a story about a young man who really inspires me, and I want to end with this story. His name is Jordan Smith. Many of you may know that name when I say it. Last year, he gained national recognition when he won season 9 of the singing competition, The Voice. During his time on The Voice, he was the show's first artist to actually reach number 1 on the iTunes pop song chart, and he set a new sales record on Billboard charts. He was interviewed after he won at Saddleback Church, and he tells a story. He says, "I've grown so close to the Lord. I try to walk with him every day. I try to direct my thoughts toward him because he has been so good to me." And so during this interview with Rick Warren, he says, how has God been faithful to me? He's done so much for me. He's healed members of my family. He's healed me. But the greatest thing I've ever received is my salvation. If he never did another thing for me in my entire life, that's absolutely enough. Everything else is just an added bonus. Smith also noted in the interview that he had committed to God that I never want to use his name to promote my position. I always want to use my position to promote his name and do whatever I could to make his name famous. May that be our heart's desire. Let's pray. Dear God, I thank you for this story where we see Jesus at work